the docks. The sexbot turned to face me. It opened its hand, and I recognized the small object. It was a combat override module. It said, "They won't allow you aboard unless you let me install this." In my feed, Art said, "Ah." They wanted us in the shuttle so that they could dispose of the bodies, or Tapan's body. Me, they obviously intended to keep. A combat override module contains code that will take over my system, overriding the governor module and the company factory set protocols, and placing me under the direct verbal or comm control of whoever the module designates. This was how Grey Chris took over Deltfall's sec units and tried to take over me. I said, "If I accept that, will they release my client?" In the feed, the sexbot whispered, "You know they won't." Aloud, it said, "Yes." I turned and let it insert the module into my data port, the data port that Art had disconnected when it altered my configuration. With my governor module hacked, it had been the only way left to assert control over me, so disabling it had been a priority. The module clicked into place, and I had a moment of purely irrational fear. Art must have picked up on it because it said, "Please, my med system makes no mistakes." Nothing happened, and from the security camera I had control of, I saw that I managed to keep the relief out of my expression. The sexbot's expression was unit standard neutral, and I followed it into the shuttle. A human stood just inside the lock, armed, his eyes flicking nervously between me and the sexbot. He said,
"Is it under control?"
"Yes," the sexbot said. He stepped back and his jaw moved as he spoke in his feed. I couldn't hack anything without the sexbot knowing, so I waited. I kept my expression blank. I had no way of knowing what the combat override module was supposed to make me do, but I was assuming it would put me under Tlacy's control. I suspected the humans and the sexbot weren't sure what the outward effect would be. Once we were through the lock, it cycled shut and a launch warning went through the feed, ending in an audible beep from the comm system. Tlacy must have bribed someone for immediate clearance because there was a clunk as the lock disengaged, and then the shuttle slid out of its slot. "I have you on my scan," Art said. The human led the way through the shuttle. It was a large model, and the access corridor went past hatchways to cabins and the engineering section before ending in a big compartment. There was cushioned bench seating against the walls and acceleration chairs to the front, near the hatch that must lead to the forward part of the ship. There were 6 unknown humans in the room, 4 armed and 2 unarmed crew. One of the armed humans held Tapan by the shoulder and had a projectile weapon pressed to her head. Tlacy stood up from a chair and looked me over with a smile. She said, "Take little Tapan to a cabin. I'll want to talk to her later about her work." Tapan's eyes were wide and frightened. I kept my expression blank. She tried to say, "Eden, I'm sorry, I'm sorry." But the guard pulled her through another hatchway and down a corridor. I didn't react, since I wanted her out of the line of fire. I listened for the hatch to close, then focused on Tlacy. She strolled toward me, thoughtful now. I guess the triumphant smile had been for Tapan's benefit. The 2 other unarmed humans were watching with nervous curiosity. The armed guards still looked cautious. To the sexbot, Tlacy said, "You really think this is one of the units from the Ganaka Pit accident?" The sexbot started to reply, and I said, "But we all know that wasn't an accident, don't we?" Now I had everybody's attention. I kept my gaze straight ahead, a good sec unit still under the control of the combat override module. Tlacy stared at me. Then her eyes narrowed. "Who am I talking to?" That was almost funny. "You think I'm a puppet? You know that's not the way we work." Tlacy was beginning to be afraid. "Who sent you?" I lowered my head to meet her gaze. "I came for my client." Tlacy's jaw moved as she gave a command in the feed, and the sexbot started to shift sideways into a combat position. Art said, The shuttle is clear of the port and moving into an orbit around the moon. Do you have a moment to let me in? I said, be fast, and let Art in. I had the sensation again, my head shoved underwater, being temporarily incapacitated as Art used me as a bridge to reach the bot controlling the shuttle. It was quick, but the sex bot had time to punch me in the jaw. Tlacy must have ordered that. It wasn't the way a unit would attack another unit. It hurt, but only in the way that would piss me off. When I didn't react immediately, Tlacy relaxed and grinned.
I like a mouthy bot. This is going to be interesting.
Art was in the shuttle's systems, and I was clear. I caught the sex bot's arm and flung it across the room toward the three armed guards. One went down, one stumbled into a chair, the third started to lift his weapon. I knocked Tlacy out of my way and stepped on the sex bot as I went over it, thumping it back down to the deck. I grabbed the muzzle of the energy weapon and shoved it upright just as he fired. The discharge struck the curved ceiling. I ripped it out of his grasp, dislocating his shoulder and at least three fingers, and slammed his head down on the console. The guard who had already fallen to the deck had a projectile weapon, and I felt two impacts, one to my side and one to my thigh. Now that's the kind of attack that actually hurts. I extended my right arm and fired my inbuilt energy weapon, catching him with two bolts in the chest. I stepped sideways to avoid an energy weapon blast from the guard who had fallen into the chair, and my third shot hit him in the shoulder. I had the blasts set to narrow, and they created deep burn wounds that usually incapacitated humans rapidly with shock and pain and, you know, having holes burned into their chest cavities. I pivoted and threw the captured gun as a distraction. The first unarmed human was on the deck, a smoking wound in her back. The guard who had missed me had shot her. The second flung herself across the compartment to try to grab a fallen projectile weapon, so I shot her in the shoulder and the leg. The sex bot rolled to its feet and charged me. I caught it, went down on my back, and flung it off and over my head. I twisted around and up to my knees, but couldn't get all the way up due to the wound in my right thigh. The sex bot shoved upright, and I grabbed its leg and popped the knee out of the socket. It went down, and I took out its left shoulder joint. Slamming it down to the deck, I turned to see Tlacy reaching for one of the fallen weapons. I said, "Touch that weapon, and I'll take it away from you and insert it into your rib cage." She froze. She was panting from fear, eyes staring. I said, "Tell your sex bot to stop fighting." It was still struggling to get up, and it was just going to hurt itself further, especially if it made me mad again. Tlacy straightened slowly, her jaw working, and the sex bot relaxed. I said, "Art, cut off Tlacy's feed."
"Done," Art said.
Tlacy winced as her feed went down. I told Tlacy, "Give the sex bot a verbal command to obey me until further notice. Try to give it any other command, and I'll rip your tongue out." Tlacy huffed out a breath, then said,
"Unit, obey the crazy rogue sec unit until further notice."
To me, she said, "You need to get better threats." I put a hand on the nearest chair seat and shoved myself to my feet. "I don't make threats. I'm just telling you what I'm going to do." Her jaw hardened. Two of the humans in the room had stopped breathing, the unarmed one that the guard had shot while aiming for me and the first one I had shot. Tlacy hadn't noticed. I looked down at the sex bot, which looked up at me. "Stay down," I said. It sent me an acknowledgement. I stepped over it, grabbed Tlacy's arm, and dragged her down the corridor to the cabin where her guard had taken Tapan. She said quickly,
"So you're a free agent, right? I can give you a job, whatever you want."
I thought, "You don't have anything I want." I said, "All you had to do was give them the fucking files, and none of us would be in this situation." The look she threw back at me was startled, incredulous. I didn't sound like her idea of a sec unit, rogue or otherwise, I guess. Humans should really do more research. There were operating manuals that would have warned her not to fuck with us. Tlacy stopped at a closed latch, said,
"Basim, it's me,"
and hit the release. The door slid up. Tapan was half sprawled across the bunk on the far wall. blood spreading across the flower pattern on her t-shirt. Drops of it splashed on the brown skin of the bare arm pressed against the wound in her side. Her raspy breath sounded loud in the small cabin. The bodyguard stared at us, eyes wide.
"He panicked when he heard the shots," Tlacy gasped. "You can't..."
"Oh yeah, I could." I swung Tlacy to shield me as the bodyguard brought up his weapon. Multiple shots hit her back, but I'd already crushed her windpipe. I took another projectile in the chest as I crossed the cabin, threw him against the wall, jammed my arm up under his chin, and triggered my energy weapon. I stepped back and let his body drop. I turned away from it and leaned over to Pawn. I said stupidly, "It's me." Her eyes were shut and she was breathing through gritted teeth. I clamped my hand over the wound to stop the bleeding and said, "Art, help." Art said, "I've been guiding the shuttle toward the transit ring, where I can dock it with myself. ETA is 17 minutes. Med system is prepping for your arrival." I sank down beside Tapan. She was just conscious enough to reach over and squeeze my hand. I pulled the useless combat override module out of the back of my neck and tossed it away. I had made a huge mistake, which seemed blindingly obvious in hindsight. I had known the invitation to exchange the signing bonus for the files was a trap from the beginning, and I should have convinced Rami and the others not to return to Ravi Hyrule. The augmented human security consultant I was pretending to be would have done that. I was used to taking orders from humans and trying to mitigate whatever damage their stupid ideas did to them, but I had wanted to work with a group again. I had enjoyed how they had listened to me. I had put my need to get to Ravi Hyrule above the safety of my clients. I was just as shit at being a security consultant as any human. Chapter 9. By the time we were on approach to the transit ring, Art had cleared us with the ring's port authority. Shuttles weren't supposed to be able to dock with transports without advance notice, but Art took care of approach permission and forged its captain's feed signature to pay the fine for not giving prior notice of the scheduled trip. They didn't suspect anything. Nobody knew transports could have bots sophisticated enough to fake being human in the feed. I sure hadn't known it. The locks weren't compatible, but Art solved that problem by pulling the shuttle into an empty module meant for lab space. It sat us down, filled the module with atmosphere, and then cycled our lock. I got upright and carried Tapan out and up the access into the main section. Comfort unit followed me. The med system was ready by the time I walked in and laid Tapan down on the platform. Drones whizzed around me, and I picked up the med system feed's instruction to remove her shoes and clothes. As the cradle closed around her, I sank down beside the platform. She was out now, the med system keeping her under while it finished its assessment and started to work. Two medical drones flew around me, one diving in toward my shoulder and the other poking at the wound in my thigh. I ignored them. A larger drone flew in, carrying Tapan's bag, her bloodstained jacket, and my knapsack. Art flashed me a view of the other drones still inside the shuttle. Four of the humans in the shuttle were still alive, though unconscious. Art had sent drones to scrub and sterilize away my fluids and Tapan's blood from the shuttle's interior. Art had already wiped the bot pilot's memory and deleted any security data. It was also chatting casually with Transit Ring Launch Authority with a forged feed signature from one of the dead humans. I watched as the drones finished and retreated, then Art sealed the shuttle again and launched it with a filed flight plan back to Ravi Hyrule. The onboard bot pilot would land it, full of terribly injured humans, and no one would know they hadn't done it to each other until they were all conscious and told their stories. Though maybe some wouldn't want to tell the story of how they had helped kidnap another human. Whatever happened, it would give us all time to get out of here. I asked Art, "How did you know to do that?" Though I already knew the answer. It knew I knew, but it said, "Episode 179 of The Rise and Fall of Sanctuary Moon." Comfort Unit knelt beside me. "Can I help?" "No." The medical drones were clamped onto me now, digging for the projectiles. and I was leaking onto Art's pristine med system floor. The anesthetic was making me numb. How did you know I was one of the Ganaka Pit units? It said, I saw you get off the tube access in that section. There's nothing else down there. It's not in the historical database anymore, but the humans still tell each other horror stories about it. If you were really a rogue and not under orders to go there, then there was an 86% chance that you went there because you were one of the units involved. I believed it. Drop your wall. It did, and I rode the feed into its brain. I could feel Art with me, alert for traps. But I found the governor module, rendered it null, and slid back out into my own body again. The comfort unit had fallen back, sitting down on the deck with a thump, staring at me. I said, go away. Don't let me see you again. Don't hurt anyone on this transit ring or I'll find you. It shoved upright, unsteady. More of Art's drones flicked through the air, making sure it didn't try to damage anything, herding it toward the door. It followed the drones out into the corridor. Through Art's feed, I watched it go through to the main hatch where the lock cycled and it went out into the transit ring. Art watched it walk away through its lock camera. It said, I thought you might destroy it. Too tired and numb to talk, I signaled a negative through the feed. It hadn't had a choice, and I hadn't broken its governor module for its sake. I did it for the four comfort units at Ganaka Pit, who had no orders and no directive to act, and had voluntarily walked into the meat grinder to try to save me and everyone else left alive in the installation. Art said, Now get on the other platform. The shuttle will land soon, and there is a great deal of evidence to destroy. When Tapan woke, I was sitting on the med system's platform, holding her hand. The med system had taken care of my wounds, and I'd cleaned off all the blood. The projectiles that had hit me and the energy bursts from my own weapons had left holes in my clothes, and Art had produced a new set for me from its recycler. It was basically Art's crew uniform without the logos. Pants with lots of sealable pockets, a long-sleeved shirt with a collar just high enough to cover my data port, and a soft hooded jacket, all of it either dark blue or black. I fed my bloody clothes into the recycler so the waste reclamation levels would be neutral and Art wouldn't have to forge its log. Tapan blinked up at me, confused. She said, and squeezed my hand. The drugs made her expression bleary. What happened? I said, they tried to kill us again. We had to leave. We're back on the transit ring, on my friend's ship. Her eyes widened as she remembered. She winced and muttered, Fuckers. Your friend was telling the truth. He gave me your files. I held up the memory clip and showed her I was putting it into the interface pocket in her bag. I'd checked it already for malware or tracers. This ship has to leave soon. I need you to call Rami and Maro to come meet us outside the embarkation zone. Okay. She fumbled at her ear, and I handed her the blue feed interface. One of Art's drones had found it in Tlacy's pocket. She took it, started to put it back in her ear, and hesitated. They're gonna be so mad. Yeah, they are. I thought they would be so glad to have her alive, it wouldn't occur to them to be angry. She winced again. I'm sorry. I should have listened to you. It wasn't your fault. Her brow crinkled. I kind of think it was. It was my fault. It was both our faults then, but we won't tell anybody. Tapan decided, and wiggled the interface into her ear. I did a quick walkthrough of the areas of the ship I had used to make sure nothing was out of place. Art's drones had already come through, taking Tapan's bloody clothes to be cleaned and sterilizing surfaces so any attempt to collect trace evidence would fail. Not that Art intended to be here when the investigation started. We were all leaving immediately, but Art believed in contingency plans. I started to remove the comm interface Art had given me. You need to clean this, too. No, Art said. Keep it. Maybe we'll come within range of each other again. The med system had already sterilized itself and deleted the records of my configuration change and the emergency trauma treatments to both me and Tapan. I was waiting for her when she came out of the bath facility. Drones followed her in to clean away any traces of her presence, and she said, "I'm ready." She had stuffed her old clothes into her pack and was wearing fresh ones. She still looked a little bleary. We walked out together, and the lock sealed behind us. I had the cameras in the embarkation zone, and Art was already doctoring the security recordings on its lock to erase our presence. We met Rami, Mero, and the rest of their group at a food stand outside the embarkation zone. Rami had messaged me that they had already bought passage on a passenger transport leaving within the hour. They greeted Tapan enthusiastically, with tears and admonishments to each other not to squeeze her too hard. I told them already not to talk about it in public. Rami turned and handed me a hard currency card. "Your friend Art said this was a good way to pay you." "Right." I took it and tucked it in a sealable pocket. They were all watching me now, and it was a little nerve-wracking. Rami said, "So you're going?" I had my eye on a cargo transport heading the right direction. With luck, I should be leaving within minutes of their departure. "Yes, I should hurry."
"Can we hug you?"
Mero let go of Tapan and faced me. I didn't step back, but it must have been obvious the answer was no. Mero nodded. "Okay, this is for you." She wrapped her arms around herself and squeezed. I said, "I've got to go," and walked away down the mall. Fading, already disengaging from its lock, Art said in my feed, "Be careful. Find your crew." I tapped the feed in acknowledgement because if I tried to say anything else, I was going to sound stupid and emotional. I didn't know what I was going to do now, if I was going to go ahead with my plan or not. I had hoped finding out what had happened at Ganaka Pit would clear everything up, but maybe revelations like that only happened in the media. Speaking of which, I needed to grab some more downloads before my next transport left. It was going to be a long trip. The End. This book was read for you by Kevin R. Free, a member of SAG-AFTRA. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Artificial Condition by Martha Wells. Recorded books are available wherever audiobooks are sold, including Audible.com, Audiobooks.com, Google Play, Apple iTunes, and in public libraries through RB Digital. Thank you for being a recorded books reader. This ends Disc 1. Artificial Condition, Disc 2. This ends Disc 2. Artificial Condition, Disc 3. This ends Disc 3. Artificial Condition, Disc 4. This ends Disc 4. Artificial Condition, Disc 5.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.